We're doing Masechet Shabbat, the 19th chapter, which is known as Rabbi Eliezer de Mila. Rabbi Eliezer that discusses the laws of Mila. Our chapter begins with Rabbi Eliezer Omer, and we know that whenever we encounter in a Mishnah Rabbi Eliezer Stam, that is Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus. And we know that Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus, the general rule is, the halacha is not like him. Rabbi Eliezer is Shamuti, and although he was a great, great, great Talmid Chacham, and had a few thousand greats, nonetheless, the halacha is not like him. The sages ruled that in almost every place, the halacha is not going to be like Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus, what? Hey Vav Reish, Kuf Nun, Vav Samech. Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus was a student, a disciple of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and he, along with Rabbi Yeshua ben Hanania, were the teachers of Rabbi Akiva. So our chapter begins with Rabbi Eliezer Omer, and there's an ancient rule that says that when the chapter begins with the name of a Tana saying something, the halacha is going to be like that Tana. The problem is that the halacha is not going to be like Rabbi Eliezer. And the question is why? So that's a discussion. Let's begin. Rabbi Eliezer Omer. Rabbi Eliezer says, we have an obligation to do a circumcision. And if that circumcision falls on Shabbos, so then the rule is as follows. If it's 8 days from the time the baby was born, so it's what's called a milah bizmana, a circumcision that is at the correct time, so then we do it on Shabbos. If it is a milah shelo bizmana, if it is a milah that's being delayed because the child was ill or for whatever reason, bottom line, it's not being done on day number 8, so then we don't do it on Shabbos. So our Mishnah is discussing a situation where the child was born on Shabbos, and 8 days later, the following Shabbos, the day he's born is day number 1, so that makes the next Shabbos day number 8. 8 days later, we are going to do the bris. So now, the question is, what happens if you didn't bring your Moel's knife before Shabbos? So you have to carry it over there on Shabbos. So Rabbi Eliezer says, Im lo evi kli me'erev Shabbat, if you didn't bring that knife on the eve of Shabbos, you didn't bring it before Shabbos, mevi'o b'Shabbat, then you may carry it on Shabbos in order to perform the circumcision on Shabbos. Megule, but you have to bring it revealed so that everyone sees you're carrying the blade and you are desecrating Shabbos in honor of this mitzvah, because Rabbi Eliezer holds that you are allowed to desecrate Shabbos for the sake of doing the mitzvah of Mila. The mitzvah of Mila is so great that the Torah permitted us to do it even at the expense of Shabbos. Now, technically, part of the mitzvah of Mila, you're wounding a child, and we say you're fixing him, so that could be an Isser D'Oraisa. So that everyone agrees you do on Shabbos. The actual Mila and everything that the child needs, so you do. But the question is, what about carrying the knife? You could have done it on the eve of Shabbos. So Rabbi Eliezer holds, we do everything on Shabbos, and to show that we love this mitzvah, that the Torah gave it such importance that it overrides Shabbos, we do it out in the open. Ordinarily, you walk in public domain, no one's carrying anything. You walk and carry that knife. Everyone sees you're carrying the knife for the bris milah, for this beautiful mitzvah that Hashem gave us. Uva sakana, and in a time of danger, when our enemies have made a decree that it is prohibited to do a circumcision in a time that the Romans or the Greeks forbade circumcisions, so then you have to carry that blade. And Chazal wanted to ensure that people won't think, he's hiding something under his jacket, he's carrying his talis, he's carrying something else, he's desecrating Shabbos. So Chazal said, Mechaseu al pi edim, cover the knife, put it under your jacket, but have witnesses who could testify that what you carried was that knife for the bris, but not that you were carrying something else.
Wait, that seems to imply that the reason for carrying it in public is not to show how beloved the Messiah, rather to not make it for people.
Excellent question. Wow. The Gemara's question. The first lines of the Gemara ask your question. Furthermore, Rabbi Eliezer said, we're not learning Gemara. Rabbi Eliezer said, furthermore, let's leave it with the pshat we said. Okay, so Meir is pushing us to the corner. solving that we're cornered, so we have to box our way out. So in honor of Meir, we'll have a quick introduction to learning Mishnah. Rashi comments on the Mishnah, and we have to ask ourselves, what do you need Rashi's commentary on the Mishnah for? You learn the Gemara, you understand the Mishnah. So we have to know that there are multiple understandings to a Mishnah. There's Pshutosh and Mishnah, the simple understanding of the Mishnah. And Pshutosh and Mishnah is the understanding that the Gemara wanted us to have when we approach the Mishnah. Then, based on that understanding, the Gemara says, wait a second, what about this? What about that? How does this make sense? And how does that make sense? And then the Gemara evolves from Pshutosh and Mishnah, from the simple understanding of the Mishnah. When we learn Mishnah, we can learn the Mishnah according to Pshutosh and Mishnah, which is what Rashi tries to do in his commentary on the Mishnah. And that is why Rashi sometimes will contradict himself from his explanation of one Mishnah to another Mishnah, because that doesn't interest Rashi. Because the Gemara will ask that contradiction. That's not Rashi's job. There's a discussion, what was Rabbeinu Avadia Mibar Tanura's intent in writing his commentary? Being that Rabbeinu Avadia Mibar Tanura was a late Rishon, he lived after the Rambam, after Rashi, he saw all of their commentaries, and in much, he fashioned his commentary after the Rambam's commentary. And the Rambam's commentary, it would seem, was not coming to give us Pshutosh and Mishnah. So there's much discussion in Rabbi Akiva Eiger in his commentary on the Mishnah, and Rabbi Akiva Eiger in his Tshuvot, in his responsa, as to how are we to understand Rabbi Ovadia Mibar Tanura's commentary. Meaning, the simple understanding is that you're living after the Gemara, and after Rashi, and after the Rambam, so then you're not going to give us Pshutosh Mishnah. You're not going to tell us the understanding that the Gemara had, and then I'll have to work my way out in the Gemara. But maybe that isn't the purpose of Rabbeinu Avadia Mibar Tanura. Maybe what he wanted to give us was a simple understanding with the assumption that afterwards we will learn Gemara. So in our learning, for much of the time, I'm trying to go in Rashi's footsteps and get a basic understanding of Mishnah, which means that sometimes the Gemara will say, wait a second, how could that be pshat? And the Gemara will give the exact opposite understanding. Sometimes, if I feel it's necessary, we'll go through that. But oftentimes, we won't, simply because I want you to have pshat in the Mishnah. A pshat in the Mishnah. So that you could run and review the Mishnayot. With time, you'll evolve. You'll want. You'll open a Tiferes Yisrael. You'll open a Rav Kehati Mishnah. You'll open one of the commentaries that do give you more bottom line. Our goal here is not to get halacha. Our goal is to encompass the Mishnayot. If we're going to spend the time to try and explore, well, what does the Gemara say about this? What does the Gemara say about that? So to a great extent, I feel like then we should really learn Gemara, which was suggested in the beginning of our learning. Initially, when we were discussing this class last year with the guys, David knows, one of the things we were considering is learning Bekiyut, covering ground in Gemara. But it was decided that it's much more important that you guys get a handle on a tremendous amount of Mishnayot, which is our goal. And in order to facilitate that goal, we have to forego a lot of the depth, which your desire for is warranted, but will have to be curtailed, unfortunately, for the sake of covering Ram. No, don't get me wrong, though. It is very important that you ask the questions. Just don't be upset that I don't take the time to give an answer. Right?
The question doesn't raise. Someone raises the question, then you can tell them. It's so obvious that even I raise the question.
You're right. So we'll have to see each time. This time, the reason I'm not answering you is because I don't remember. I remember the Gemara asked the question. I don't remember what the Gemara answers. Furthermore, Rabbi Eliezer said, "Koritim etzim lasot lechamin lasot kli barzel." Rabbi Eliezer says, "You know what? If you need to, you could even chop down the wood to make the fire, to make the coals, to make the knife, to do the circumcision." So that's called machshirei mitzvah, the things that are necessary in order to do the mitzvah, but there are things you could have done beforehand. So they're so to speak, preconditions to preconditions. You need a knife. You need a fire to make a knife. You could have had made a knife before Shabbos. So we say that even that, Rabbi Eliezer permits us. What? Techamin are coals, correct. No, because he derives from the verses that all this is permitted. The Gemara says that in his town they did this, and in his town they would do all this on Shabbos to show how much we love the mitzvah of Milah. And once upon a time, there was a decree the Romans decreed that no one could do circumcision, and for some reason they allowed his town to do the circumcision. So the Gemara seems to indicate that in Shamayim they held on this. His town went according to his psak, so they were entitled to do this. Klalama Rabbi Akiva. So Rabbi Akiva, who is a disciple of Rabbi Eliezer, but he is a Talmid who grew so much that he could even argue on his Rabbein, and sometimes he's right. And we said, generally in Halacha, we're not going to go like Rabbi Eliezer. So Rabbi Akiva told us a general rule. And whenever we have a generalization in the Mishnah, we have to know that Ein lemeidim min haklalot. We don't learn from generalizations in the Mishnah. The generalization means in general it's this way, but there are going to be exceptions, so you never know which is the exception.
This time it's nothing to Rabbi Akiva, but if this is not halacha either.
Oh, I didn't say that. I didn't say it's not halacha. I just said when we see generalization, we shouldn't assume it's 100%. Klanam Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva said the following rule: Kol melacha she'efshar la'asotam erev Shabbat, any melacha that you could have done before Shabbos, ina docha et haShabbat, that does not push over Shabbos. V'sheiv shal asotam erev Shabbat, but a melacha that you could not have done from the eve of Shabbos, docha et haShabbat, that would push over Shabbos. The bris you couldn't do on Friday. You have to do on the eighth day onward. But the preparation of the knife, carrying of the knife, everything that's machshirei mila, the preparations for the mila, that whatever could have been done, should have been done. Says Mishnah Beis. Let's just review what we see in Mishnah Aleph. Rabbi Eliezer said that you could carry the knife on Shabbos, but you have to do it revealed, and at a time of danger, make sure at least there are witnesses who know that you're doing it for the sake of a mitzvah. And Rabbi Eliezer said you're allowed to do all the preparations on Shabbos, including cutting the wood to make the coals to make the knife. And Rabbi Akiva disagrees and tells us the rule that anything you could have done in preparation for the milah before Shabbos does not push over Shabbos. For milah. Stam mitzvot aren't tocheta Shabbat.
But, no, stam mitzvot have to be done on Shabbat.
Give an example. What do you mean?
It says kol melacha.
He's talking about a bris.
Is he?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mission.
Let's say you don't have wine to make kiddush. Can you make wine?
Yeah, no. You can't make wine on Shabbos. You have to have a special drasha. For Milo, we have a special drasha that it pushes over Shabbos. Other mitzvot, we don't have a special drasha.
We studied this last year. So, I can be confident that it's kol melacha is only by Mila?
Yes. Till you learn the Gemara. Mishnah Beis. What?
I'm saying it's one pasuk that says you should do Mila on the eighth day.
Right.
It's a special pasuk. This is Mila on the eighth day.
The Mishnah says anything that you need to do for the Mila, you do on Shabbos. Malin, you circumcise. Uforin, and you remove the skin that's under the foreskin. Umotzitzin, and you suck out the blood. Venotin laisplanit, you put on a bandage. Vechamon, and cinnamon, or whatever it was that they put to help it cure. And if you didn't prepare it, if you didn't grind it from before Shabbos, you could chew on the cinnamon and put it on. Now, we will have a quick class on what is a circumcision. Can we have a piece of paper? Thank you. Okay, gentlemen, gather around and we'll draw a picture. And now you are about to understand what a bris is. Okay, you don't have to look. You the EMT. You the fireman. Come on. Isplanit is a bandage. Chamon is like cinnamon. It's some kind of spice. Okay. Okay. This is the baby's organ. You'll notice that the baby's organ has a layer of skin that comes from the stomach, goes up, covers the whole organ, goes back down to the stomach. Now, technically, this is all one skin. We say in halacha that when you make the organ firm, so then you measure from where the organ starts, what we would call the cherry on top, from where the organ gets wide, the top part, the gland, from this point upward, meaning from here, this skin from this point up is called an arla, foreskin. Now really, when you look at the skin on the baby, it's all one skin going up. But we say from here up is the foreskin, whatever would cover it when the baby is firm, when his organ is firm. From this point up is the foreskin, from this point down is not. So what we have to do is really cut off this skin, the skin from here up. How do we do that? How do you get this? So what you could do is peel it off, like you're peeling an orange, right? That's one way of doing it. What you could do is peel it up, like you're peeling an orange.
Literally rip it?
Take a knife and just peel upwards, slice and peel. But you understand that you're endangering the organ. So what we do is something else. Usually I do this with a banana, and it's peeled. I don't have. I didn't know we were doing this tonight. You guys popped a new one on me. Not with your clip. I need something soft. Just a second. Okay, we'll do it with the tissue. Watch. Okay, let's make believe this is the organ. Let's make believe this is the layer of skin that's coming up on the organ. Now, let's say this is where the gland is. So I need to cut this skin. Now, this skin right now, we will make believe is totally not attached to the gland. Really it is a little bit, and we'll discuss that in a minute. But technically, it's attached to the stomach. So we're going to make believe that it's not attached to the gland. So I need to grab this skin from here, from where the gland is upward. I grab it. What happens? The gland shoots down a little bit, right? Now, what can I do? I can slice off the skin that I need to slice. Bris Mila. Now, notice, where's the cut? People don't realize this. Where's the cut? The cut is here, on the outer skin, all around here. The cut is not by the gland. You see a bright red gland, people think, oh, poor baby. They put all the cream up there on the gland. There's nothing to do with it. The gland was there, the gland wasn't cut, nothing happened to the gland. Oy vavoy, the gland is cut. What you're cutting off is this layer of skin. This layer of skin you're pulling up, and then it looks like this. You have the gland. Whatever. You have the gland here. And you have the layer of skin that you've pulled up. You stretch it up. And now you're holding the skin up here. You guys with me so far?
Yeah.
You're holding it up. Now,
pull it up a little more so you can put the whatever.
We pull it up, and then we put a clamp here. We put, not really a clamp, we put what's called a magin. We put a shield. I didn't know we were doing this. I would have brought my equipment. Sorry.
I carry those surgical knives all the time.
The knives are for you guys. The rest of the equipment I don't carry around with me.
I'm taken care of. I have my sitter with the side of my mole and everything. You know?
A lot of people don't have a kosher bris. So I keep, wherever I teach, I keep a pack of knives.
Oh, seriously?
So that, yeah, many times guys come to me in Machon Mir and they say, look, I know that I was circumcised by a non-Jewish mole. I know that I was circumcised when I was 2 days old, and I was circumcised in the hospital at night. So then I tell them, come into the office and we'll fix it in 1 second. All you do is you touch them and you get one drop of blood and it's kosher. So people sometimes are very scared. They say, when can we do it? So I say, now. This way they don't have to be nervous. I do it that moment. So I keep knives here, and I keep knives in Katamon.
So
There were years at Machon Meir where I was doing 2 or 3 a week. No. Here at Machon Meir, we all kinds of guys kept coming over. There was a time when it was mamash. Every week I was doing 2 or 3. Lately, it's been a little bit quieter. So now, back
to... heard that. You're like,
stay away. Don't go there. You gotta cut. I don't cut. I told you. It's one... Okay, so now, back to our bris. So what are we doing when we do bris? We pull up the foreskin. We take a thing, a magin, which is really just a piece of metal that's going to ensure that the gland stays beneath the skin, that the knife doesn't touch the gland. Once upon a time, they didn't do that. They just pull it way up high and cut up here. What? Well, they knew how far does the gland reach. The skin is far more pliable. I mean, think about it. This skin is not. But you know that the skin down there is because the gland can expand and contract, and the skin expands and contracts with it. So the skin that's the foreskin can expand much more than the gland can ever expand. So you pull it up, and you pull up till, and you can even feel. You feel where the gland reaches, and then you cut. But today we do much more scientific. We stick on the magen, like you all have seen, and we slice on the magen, and then you get a straight cut. Not that it makes any difference in the long term, but it's a nicer, more professional way of doing things. And now we have the foreskin. Now, all this is step number one. We've ignored one aspect of the bris, which we're about to discuss. What happens after you've cut? So you have the gland. And then this skin slides back down. It's been cut over here, right? So this comes off. the skin slides back down, and then the skin shrivels up down here, and somewhere around here you have the skin that is cut and bleeding. Okay, people think up here is the wound. It's not. It has nothing to do with it. The wound is down here. The wound is where the skin was cut. And the skin usually shrivels up, so it's pretty like on the bottom of, like near his stomach. Okay. Now let's get a little bit more complicated.
Wait, answer.
Yes.
So the areolium on that skin have a hole?
Yeah, there's a hole there, sure. There's a hole there. Not only that, I mean, when people grow up, if they still have an arla, so this becomes very flexible, and they could stick their finger in between the two skins and clean over there. They have to clean. If they don't clean over there, then they could get all kinds of infections. So they have to separate this, separate the foreskin, and clean between the gland and the foreskin. That's what they should do. Now, step number two.
There's a finger width.
The skin, I told you could stretch it all the way up. So, yes.
Even the hole you can
see? The stretch, yeah. Okay, guys, let's continue. Now, let's evolve. Let's move forward to a more accurate picture. Here is our gland. And here is the foreskin. And coming out from the bottom of the gland, where the gland becomes the aver, the organ, there is a thin layer of skin, a membrane that comes out here and attaches itself like this to the foreskin. So you have, I purposely drew the foreskin up on top, but really there is a thin membrane over here. Now this membrane is stuck onto the gland, more or less. As a child grows older, every time he gets an erection, so a person who is uncircumcised, his erection looks like this. This is the foreskin. This is the gland. His gland will protrude from the foreskin to some degree. Either the foreskin will reach here or here or here. When a person has an erection, so the gland protrudes from the foreskin. And as that happens each time, slowly but surely this membrane gets detached from the gland, because the gland just protrudes through the foreskin and keeps stretching in and out and in and out. And eventually, right. And if you want, you could actually stick a finger in and clean over here. Now, this foreskin in halacha is called all the skin hapri'ah, that we uncover. When we do bris milah, there are two steps. After we cut off the foreskin, we peel back this membrane. Part of the bris milah is peeling back the membrane to the back of the gland. If you haven't taken off the foreskin, which is called pri'ah, uncovering, if you have not peeled off the foreskin, it is not a kosher milah. So, the milah has two steps. There is milah, the cutting off of the foreskin, and then there's pri'ah, peeling back the foreskin. Yes, Moshe? What's hard? One second. I want Moshe
to understand. I've never actually watched the Beyond Guts. I tried to imagine what you're peeling back, but I obviously,
you wanna,
for many reasons, can't imagine this being done.
Feel on the bottom of your lip.
It's all hard because I have a lot of piercings. So.
So on the top of your lip, you'll feel that in the middle, there's a little piece of skin that connects the lip to the gums. Feels like a thin piece of skin, right?
Yeah.
You understand that if you pull it, it'll tear.
Okay.
You understand that on a baby...
You
understand that on a baby, it's even thinner, right?
Yeah.
So the membrane on the baby's gland is like that. It's a thin...
That you rip that?
Now, technically, in order to pull it down, and if you don't want it to come back up, so you have to make a rip. You tear it in two and put it down.
What are you pulling down exactly?
The membrane. You have the gland covered with a membrane. You tear the membrane in two and push it down. Today we do it differently. Because if you've torn it in two, so you're right, it could flap up. But usually when you have skin or a membrane that's on bare flesh, it sticks to the bare flesh. Usually it shrivels up at the bottom of the gland. Today we do it slightly different. But that's not pertinent to our Mishnah, so we're not going to discuss it now.
Can you discuss it anyway?
If everyone else wants to discuss it, I don't mind discussing it. Yes.
When you, how do you even pull up the foreskin with that membrane? The membrane doesn't rip then?
The membrane does not rip because the membrane could be stretched too.
So much so even that you're pulling the foreskin much more forward than the whatever.
The membrane either will come up with it or won't come up with it. Usually you try to get the membrane to go up with it.
If it's connected to it, how can it not come up?
The question is how much of it comes up. How much does it stretch?
If it doesn't stretch, it rips.
Not exactly. Meaning, technically it stretches. Let's not learn all of Mila on one foot.
How long does it take for
Because what could happen is that it doesn't stretch, and then you pull up, and it folds inward. Meaning, there once was a bris like this that needed to be fixed. I wasn't the mole who did it, but I was almost the mole who fixed it. The mole pulled up the gland, the foreskin, and in one case he did realize, in another case he didn't realize that it didn't detach. So then what happened was it pulled up and folded inward because it was still attached to the middle. So he sliced, and what's left is on the top, a little bit of foreskin with or a fria. So, but had he done what we usually do today, he wouldn't have had that problem.
Which is what?
So you guys want to know what we do today. So today,
wait,
there's
question.
Yeah.
When you cut the foreskin,
I just want to tell you that you will rarely find someone who will explain this to you.
I know.
I've explained it to Mohalim because not a person who does it knows what he's supposed to do, but he doesn't always understand exactly the makeup and what's really going on. Meaning, you learn. It depends on how well,
how long does it take
no.
to learn?
No. You know what to do. You know what to do. Fine.
How long does it take to learn this?
Depends on the teacher more than the student.
If you would teach it to us, how long would it take?
It depends on how many brises you have to each day. If I had 5 britot a day, I could teach you in a few weeks.
Can you invite me to any bris that you do?
I don't advertise. My business card doesn't even say, it just mentions it in passing, Nama Moel. I don't advertise anywhere, and the brises I do for free, so, it's not...
Do you know any other
Moel supermarket? If you want to learn, I could put you in touch with someone who teaches for free, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I was actually thinking about it on the... I'm like, I know, off topic, I was thinking about it today. I'm like, okay, why did I do this?
Question?
Yeah.
When you cut the foreskin, why doesn't the membrane cut in half too? Cut it.
Very often you will cut part of the membrane, correct.
Then you just need to...
Sometimes, it depends, but usually you only cut a very little part of the membrane. Meaning... Let's say you pull it up and you cut this part of the membrane, you still have all this that's attached. If you pull it down, it'll go back up.
And it doesn't go back to here like the foreskin does?
No, because it's attached and it's clung on. The membrane is pretty stuck on it on a newborn baby. He hasn't really had an erection, he hasn't stretched out or anything. Like as a person matures, then it gets detached slowly as he grows older and older and older. But that takes years. When a baby is born, usually it's attached pretty firmly. So what do we do today? What we do today is known as the Pirutinsky method. Not everyone agrees with it, but most people agree with it. So some Mohalim do not do it, but most Mohalim do. Just this past week, there was a Mohal who decided he's not doing it, and it was a very complicated bris. He had to work with scissors. He had a... It was like... He called... Okay, look...
Because in this school, people remember their bris. David the Pollock, I don't know his last name. Said that they had to use scissors on him.
So that doesn't mean anything, because on an adult, it's a totally different type of bris. We do scissors, we stitch, we cauterize, we do a lot of things. We stop the bleeding. We do a totally different bris on an adult.
It was a regular bris on an adult. You wouldn't do it in the office in a second.
Right. Okay, so what do we do today? What we do is, you could even take a pen, but obviously we take a sterile object that looks very much like a pen, and we stick it in here, into under the gland and under the foreskin and under the ara priya, under the membrane, and we just turn it around and separate the membrane from the gland. Now the baby before you do anything, first thing you do, you come to a bris, you take the baby and you open his diaper and you stick in this instrument and you just pass it around the gland. And when you pass it around, obviously I'm making it sound very simple, right? I mean, when you pass it around the gland, what you're doing is you're separating the membrane from the gland.
How do you know inside the membrane when it's still covered with the foreskin?
You got no place else to go but into the gland.
Oh, you cannot go...
You can't go under the foreskin. The membrane attaches to the foreskin over here. You can't get around that.
And the instrument is made that you cannot... Dull,
right. It's made very, very... It's got no point at the end. It's like, it's duller than this pen. I mean, it's a very dull. It cannot hurt the baby. Now, what you're doing is you're separating the membrane. You go around. One, two. You separate it. Come on. That's all you have to do. Now, what do you... And it separates, right? Because with time it would separate anyways.
Yes.
By every person it separates. What you're doing is you're quickly just putting... It's as though you could put in a little finger and separate it. You can't put in a little finger, so you're putting in a little instrument and doing it. Adults do it with their finger as they clean themselves. You're doing it for the baby with an instrument. Now, what do you gain by that? What you gain is that when you grab the foreskin, you're also grabbing much of the membrane with it. When you pull up the foreskin, you're pulling up most of the membrane. And then when you cut off the foreskin with one slice, you've cut off most of the membrane. And that's why I said today, we don't really divide it in half most of the time. Because most of the time, with one cut, you're finished.
How far does it go back?
Oh, so then it depends on how well you were able to grab the membrane. What happens is after the bris, the baby looks like this. The foreskin slides down. And the membrane depends on how much you cut. Sometimes you cut most of it, and then there's only a drop here, and then you have nothing to do with with the membrane. And sometimes you only cut half of the membrane. Depends on how well you grabbed it. Remember, through the foreskin, you're trying to grab the membrane too. You're pulling it up. Now, you don't know. You don't know whether you grabbed it well or not. There are tricks to how to try and get it well, but whatever. Bottom line, you don't know until after you cut. So you're pulling it up, and hopefully you're grabbing much of the membrane. After you cut, a certain amount remains. Sometimes it remains still here. Sometimes it remains still here. If it remains still here, you might end up having to slice the membrane to cut it. I mean, I've had brises where I grabbed and I cut, and then you might have been there. By Rav Oren's son, after I cut, I think it was his son. Maybe it was a different bris. I don't remember anymore. I saw that the membrane was still there, and I could have pulled it down, but it didn't make sense to pull it down. Maybe it was my own son. I don't remember. So I stuck in, you stick in scissors, you cut it, and you put it down. I mean, you could do it with your nails, but sometimes it's slippery. Like, very often, you have blood there. So you got to grab it and pull it. And in ancient times, that's how they did it. They did it with their hands. And that's the ideal way, Kabbalistically, to do it with your nails. So the baby doesn't necessarily start crying. Usually the baby starts crying when you take off his diaper. That's usually when the baby starts crying. A trick I always tell parents is, when you're changing your baby's diaper the 3 days before the bris, listen to him crying, because he's going to cry more with the diaper than at my bris. And all parents agreed with me. All the parents, I've always asked them, was it more when you did the diaper or when I did the bris? They said it was more about the diaper. Why? Because at the bris, all you're listening to is that cry. So it sounds like, oh, the poor baby. If you'd sit at home, and that's the homework I give them, I say, part of your preparation for the bris is to sit at home, listen to him cry at a diaper change. When you'll hear him cry at a diaper change, then you'll be able to... That's the only... People never listen. The only time they listen to a baby cry is during the bris. So of course it sounds like he's wailing. He's crying because he's cold, yeah. Look, no one's saying that a bris doesn't hurt. You sliced off a piece of skin, it's got to hurt. I mean, I'm not saying that it's fun. But it's a mitzvah. And the baby obviously isn't crying too much because we have britot where the baby doesn't cry at all. Go figure. It does happen, and no one knows why. Mohalim will tell you all kinds of things, but between me and you, no one knows why. You could put anesthesia, you could do all kinds of things, it's not good for the baby. So, at the end of the day, sometimes the babies do cry, sometimes they don't. Obviously, if you don't know what you're doing and you're playing around and you're pulling this way and pulling that way, putting it in, taking it out, pulling it in, taking it out, okay, then yeah, you're going to make the baby cry. But and you should know, there are sometimes we thought that are very complicated. It depends on the build of the baby, meaning we're thinking of a simple case. Imagine a situation we haven't dealt with where his sac is. I was at a bris where the baby's sac reached like this. This is the gland. And this is the foreskin. And this is the sac. Okay? Now you have to cut here, and you can't cut the sac. But the sac is attached exactly where you have to cut. Now that's a very tricky bris.
To the foreskin?
The sac is attached to the foreskin. Now sometimes it's attached higher up, sometimes lower. We're not all created the same way. So imagine a situation where the sac is attached here and you have to slice right above it. So that's why sometimes you'll see the moil is trying to put exactly where he's putting it. Sometimes it's tough. The fact that he has to realign them again doesn't mean anything. Could just mean he's an expert. Could mean he caught on to the difficulty of this wrist. There's another thing that's sometimes very difficult. If it's a very small labor, sometimes baby's a preemie. That's the bris that happened this week. The baby was a tiny baby. So they had a very small labor. And now you have to cut a very small amount and be accurate. And after you cut it, the baby's aver goes into his stomach. And now you got to go try and bandage it when everything is covered up and you're fighting the stomach trying to bandage it. So these are complications of bris, and there's nothing you can do but do a good job. When I came to a certain bris here in the yeshiva, so I didn't get to see the baby beforehand, they live far away, and I asked a rabbi who's a moel, I asked him to take a look at the baby, make sure everything's okay. So he was traveling by there, stopped in, he said, yeah, no problem, easy bris, everything's okay. I come to do the bris and I see they're going straight into the foreskin. There's a huge vein. The way the baby was built, I had to cut a vein. There was no way, there's no other way to do it. So we're all built differently. I look at it and I say, okay, I hope you don't end up in the hospital here. He didn't tell me this. I would have warned the parents.
Vein, where is the vein supposed to be?
The vein, there are different veins in the foreskin, and sometimes they're built this way and sometimes that way. We're not all built the same way. Okay, Baruch Hashem, that baby was mature. I did the bris, and I know that hopefully it won't be an issue stopping the bleeding. That baby was mature. We were able to stop the bleeding on the moil. And as I was bandaging, I could see that the bleeding stopped. And I'm lucky. How can I say? Every moel, once you do 100 bris, the rule is you'll end up in the hospital at least once. You can't avoid it. There are things you cannot avoid. You could be the best moel in the world. If you're going to do many brisot, then eventually... Right. Not everyone. I was at a bris where the moel didn't even make it. His son made it. He couldn't make it. He was stuck in traffic. They didn't want to wait. The audience was there. I was there waiting for him. His son was there. So I was ready to do it if he wanted me to do it. He said, let my son do it. His son did it. The baby ended up in the hospital 2 days later.
His son was
a moel also, yeah. So his son was a youngster, 19, 20 years old. His son did the bris, and 2 days later, the baby was in the hospital. So he told me about it. There was a problem. The hospital messed up when they released the baby. He had an illness that they didn't catch. They tried to blame his son.
The
non-fighting
thingy?
No, something else.
That's
that would have been that day.
Yeah.
It was something else.
What do you look for when you look at the baby? This ended up being a whole moral
problem. Right.
It's Thursday.
What do you look for?
What
you look for is, first of all, that the baby is healthy, which means he has good reflexes. You check his reflexes, you check his strength, you check his color, and you also check the history of when he was born. How much did he weigh? Was there any difficulty at childbirth? All of this can have ramifications as to when the bris will be. You're basically checking that the baby's a healthy child, that the mila is not dangerous for him.
You check his organ as well?
You also check his organ. You check to see how he's built. Today, most mohalim don't check a baby before the bris. They rely on the hospital. If they release them, they said he's okay, he's okay. Most mohalim, today mohalim do 5 brises a day. So if you have to... one at Shacharis, one at 10, one at Mincha, one after Mincha. every day?
I was at one at Myers because it was like a fast day or something.
Never do it at Myers. You're not allowed to do it at Myers.
But like right before Myers.
That we do, right. On Tisha B'Av, we do it late in the afternoon, right? Because that way you could have the meal right afterwards.
I know, it's the fast right before Yom
Kippur. So that way people could sit down, Dav Ma'ariv, and sit down for the meal. Okay, so now we had our quick class on Mila. You're all ready to start learning Mila. Okay, we'll get the chulin. So let's continue. Now, when we... Let's talk after class. Why do you think there's only one? Let's continue. Right? So let's read our Mishnah again now that we understand what a bris is all about. Our Mishnah says, Osin kol tzochei milah b'shabbat. We do all the things that are necessary for a milah on Shabbos. You leave it there.
You don't have to bury it?
The membrane you pull down, that's priya. You leave it there on the bottom.
You don't have to cut it up?
No, you don't have to cut it up. Not at all. You leave it there. You peel it down. It's on the bottom of the thing. Look. You won't be able to tell on yourself. I'll tell you to look at yourself and see, but you won't be able to tell today. Do I have pictures here to show you?
On the computer.
Right, I'm trying to think. I don't have pictures. I'll gladly show you like what everything looks like, but I don't have pictures on my computer now. I don't think I have pictures now. No, sorry. There are pictures online. You could easily find pictures and look, and then you see. But okay, back to our Mishnah. Asim kol tzochim milah b'shabbat. You do everything that's necessary for Milan Shabbos. Shlomo HaMelech said, the words of Torah are Shechorot Ka'orev, black as a raven. Chazal said, because sometimes you discuss things that would seem black. You wouldn't be talking about them on the street. But you enter a Beis Medrash and they're talking about a woman's period. They're talking about, is she pure? Is she... all kinds of things. All this is part of Torah. And sometimes Torah is Shechor Ka'orev.
I was learning a piece of Torah and one of the Rabbi said that he slept with a... I must have translated it wrong, but
right.
He slept with a goose, and that's why he ended up becoming
Bring the Gemara and we'll see. Okay, the Gemara in Brachos?
Yeah.
In the first chapter?
No.
Okay, let's see. So the... not the eighth, you mean the ninth. Mo'alin, we'll see the Gemara together. The
Shachat is branded?
We'll reread the Mishnah now. The Mishnah says Mo'alin. You could slice off the foreskin. Uforein, and you could peel back the membrane. Umotzitzin, and you suck the blood. So right after you slice, our sages said there's an action called mitzitza, where the Mo'al puts his mouth over the baby's gland and sucks to ensure that the blood flows smoothly. You can do it with a tube, no problem. Let's not get personal. V'notnin alei is planit, and you place the bandage over the you place the bandage on the mila. You have to bandage it up to help the bleeding stop. V'chamon, which is some kind of spice, probably cinnamon, that they used to put on the wound to help it heal. To help it stop bleeding.
How big is that tube?
Not big. What you do when you do mitzitza with a tube is you take a syringe and you put in gauze in the syringe so that the blood doesn't come to your mouth. And then you put the syringe over the gland and you just suck. And then the vacuum, when you suck, draws out the blood and that's it. It's the same thing as you would do with your mouth. Like when you give a shot with a needle, you take out the needle part, and you only have the tube part. So you take a plastic syringe and you suck, and that's it. You put it over the gland, you suck. You're taking, you're reversing it.
Oh, you reverse it.
You put it with the opening down. The small part is in your mouth. Im lo shachak, yeah. That's not atafah. Atafah is necessary if a person did not have a kosher bris. So then what we do is we go to the gland and we go to this part up here, right where the what?
Keep that paper.
Up here, under the gland, we take some people do it with a needle, but it's much simpler the way I do it. You take a surgical knife and you just touch the skin here and you make a scratch. When I do it, most of the times the people don't feel anything. All you're doing is taking a very, very sharp knife and touching. You're just touching it, and then when you touch with a very sharp knife, so once, twice, you have to know how to do it. You don't want to get the guy to the hospital, but if you do it right, so then I don't have it on me. I left it.
So you're cutting it, or are you pricking it?
I'll show you. He wants to show on him. I'll show you. Give us your hand. I'll show you.
Is it going to hurt?
Now you ask. I'm going to show you how it's done. It's not going to hurt.
Okay, cool.
Look what trust he has.
No, are you allowed
to? Ah, he's right. He's got a good point. So I won't do it with the sharp part. Watch. You don't want
the rough, yeah. The rough knife.
I use disposable. You don't want to do it with our veins.
Yeah.
Okay.
Obviously.
So, what you do, I'll do it on myself. I won't do it on you.
No, but you don't cut.
I don't mind.
Cut yourself.
I'm not cutting. Watch.
So do it on Moshe.
What you do is, you take the knife, and you just do this. With the sharp part.
Yeah.
But if you do it with the sharp part, so you have to apply a drop more pressure just to make a scratch. If you want to do it, I'll let you feel it. But it's you're applying a drop of pressure just to scratch.
Yeah, but on this skin, it won't work. You have to
apply a lot
more pressure.
On this skin, you'll need much more pressure. On the skin down there, you touch it like this, and that's it. Now, you have nowhere to do it. Because if you do it in the wrong place, you could have the guy in the hospital.
You don't do it on the vein.
You don't do it on the vein, but you have to know how to look at it to know where the veins are. Okay.
Well, let's just see how sharp that thing is. Go for it.
What, this? Yeah. This is a surgical knife. This cuts skin. What do you mean?
I'm not going to go for that.
Touch it, feel it. You'll see for yourself. Let's continue, guys. This is what I do personal for. But that's not... It's very sharp, but it's made to cut skin. It's not made to... Be careful. careful. It's sharper than a razor blade. Klal amar Rabbi Akiva, we did. Okay. On the skin on the fingers, right, but it's so sharp that you won't feel when it cuts. No, not in your veins. David, give me back the knife.
Not over the sefer.
Doesn't see how sharp it is.
You can't tell like that. I mean, watch.
Don't.
If you do it like this.
Everything cuts paper.
It cuts. Yeah, but that made a slice. That made a slice. You do it and you'll see. You'll feel it. It's not. You'll see that with a minimal amount of pressure, it already it's in. Right. So that's the advantage of doing a tougher with this. I do with that because that way the people don't feel it. It's more scary. A needle seems like a needle. So you take you pull out a knife like this, people get scared. But
I've had this person for a while, but bring me back. Has there ever been an occurrence where someone became very fat and he needed another Brit Milah because...
We'll get to it. It's a Mishnah coming up.
Oh, there's a Mishnah?
Yeah.
I haven't read in the Mishnah. Has it happened before?
No, I didn't cut myself. I can just feel my head is really sharp.
Yeah, that's what's used for surgery. Don't play games with it. Moshe, give me back my knife. Thank you.
Has it happened before that you'll need another Brit Milah after having a kosher Brit Milah and you so...
Let's wait till we get there in the Mishnah and we'll discuss it. I don't think we'll get there tonight, but we'll get there. So, the Mishnah says, "Im lo shachak merv Shabbat," if he didn't grind up the cinnamon to use from before Shabbos, "lo es b'shinav," then he could grind it up by chewing it with his teeth, "v'noten," and then place it on the circumcision.
Why cinnamon?
That's what they used to stop the bleeding. In Yemen, they used egg yolk. egg, the white of egg. Im lo taraf yain b'shemen merev Shabbat. If he didn't mix the wine and the oil, that they used to mix wine and oil and put it on, just like today, they mixed eggs and put them on. This stuff helped stop the bleeding. So if you didn't prepare it from the eve of Shabbos, you do is you place each one alone. You place the wine alone, you place the oil alone, and they mix on the eve. I guess they used both. You don't make the special robe that they made. They used to make a special bandage that was like the gland, that was like its shape, and that would cling onto it. So if you didn't prepare that bandage for it, so then the idea of that bandage is that it holds down. You'll see some Moalim still today use it. That holds down the foreskin, not so much the foreskin as the Ora Priya. The foreskin isn't going to come up if you cut correctly. The Ora Priya might. The skin, the membrane might. So then the Mishnah says, "V'enosin la chaluk lechatchila." So you don't make this robe initially if you haven't prepared it. Aval korecha le'asmaltu, but you wrap a bandage around it. So that's what today. That's what most Mohalim do. I use a sterile bandage. I just cut it. I have to show you. I didn't know we were going to do this tonight. I would have brought one to show you. Remind me next week. I'll bring one. I'll show you.
Do you use that? I did bandage. I got these special bandages. Stick.
Right.
Do you use those?
Nope. I personally do the simplest, cleanest wrist possible. Meaning I don't use, there are bandages that cauterize, there are bandages that have medication on them. I don't believe in all that. I don't think it's right to add chemicals. The simple bandaging is enough. Why is this? I use a plain gauze, which is what the Ministry of Health recommends too. It doesn't look as good. It's part of the reason why I'm not hired every day. I'm not out there to impress anyone. I'm out there to do what's best for the baby. There are a lot of tricks that make you look better as a mohel, but aren't as good for the baby. I don't want to tell them to you, but there are a lot of tricks that make you look much better. But that has nothing to do with what's good for the baby. It has to do with what's good for your PR.
Robert Breslau, he's a mohel, right?
Right.
Okay. Maybe you have to set the
So, smartut literally means a rag, but what the Mishnah means is you wrap a bandage around the bris. The chaluk is that it's fashioned exactly like the gland, so that when you put it on, it's like wearing the part of the glove that's on a finger. It's exactly like that. Smartut is a bandage that you're wrapping. It's not made to size. So you're wrapping it.
Sure.
Laila
tov.
Yeah.
What is chaluk? Is the organ-shaped bandage?
So the
pre-shaped like the organ.
That's one understanding, but the Rav understands that it's a bandage that has a hole in it. So you're sticking it through the hole, meaning you have a bandage with a hole, and you're sticking the organ through the hole. And then that's going to ensure that the foreskin, that the membrane doesn't come back up.
And what's korech?
Korech, he wraps around it, smaltut, a rag. If he didn't bring this bandage from the eve of Shabbos, from before Shabbos, korech aletzbao umevi, so he wraps it around his own finger, as though he's wearing it as a glove on his finger. And he brings it like that as something that he wears on his finger. And you could even bring it not only from house to house within the same courtyard, even though there's no Eruv, but even from one yard to another yard, even when they don't have an Eruv between the 2 yards. So what? Right. So now let's review the Mishnah. What?
Within the Eruv, why can't you carry?
We're not talking within there. Within there, it's no problem. We're talking about
what is made of?
Not only within the same courtyard where there's no Eruv, where you're transferring from house to house without an Eruv, but even from yard to yard without an Eruv.
What's the difference?
That What?
There is. It's still, they're both prohibition of carrying. Is there a bigger prohibition within the scope of carrying?
So let's leave that for now. Maybe if you remind me, we'll start with that next time.
You have to do it with the Shinui because it's not part of the initial Brimida.
Right. That's how I understand, yeah.
What if it was a Rishi Rabin from your house to Rishi Rabin?
From what we've seen now, only Rabbi Eliezer would permit it. Rabbi Eliezer allows you to do Melacha, so he would let you carry it in Rishus Rabin. We don't go with Rabbi Eliezer, so you cannot. Happens to be that in the Gemara quotes a Braisa, which quotes four or five opinions that variate on how much we're willing to be lenient to let you carry it, to take it. But what we're doing is the Mishnah, so for us, we know two shitot, Rabbi Eliezer and not Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer holds you're allowed to do biblical prohibitions for the sake of the Mila, and we hold that the only biblical prohibition you could do is the Mila and the Mitzitza, but everything else, prepare from the eve of Shabbos. There's no reason. Everything else you could have prepared from beforehand, so prepare it from beforehand. We're not going to let you do it. The only thing is, if you need to bring the bandage, so we'll let you do it in this way. If it's only a rabbinic prohibition of Eruv, so then we say wear it, and even though it's not really a garment, but being that you're carrying it in a fashion that's garment-like, you could bring it. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So what we see in this Mishnah, we saw that we do everything that's necessary for the bris with the bris. We slice, we peel back, we suck, we put the medication. If you didn't grind the medication from before Shabbos, you chew it with your teeth. If you didn't mix the wine and the oil from before Shabbos, you put each alone and then they mix on the child themselves. We don't make this special garment, this special bandage with a hole in it on Shabbos, but we would wrap around the wound to help the bleeding stop. And if obviously all of this is talking about where there's no sakana, if there's a sakana, you do everything. If you didn't prepare from the eve of Shabbos, if you didn't bring bandages, so then you wrap them around your finger and you bring them even from another courtyard without an Erev on Shabbos itself. Okay, Yisher Koach.